Mr. Speaker, the Public Facilities Privacy and Security Act passed at the March 23 special session disallowed a state claim for relief for employment discrimination. This was widely misreported as preventing victims of employment discrimination from suing in state court. It never did that. But nevertheless, at the special session, in response to concerns raised then, we said that we would re-examine whether that was whether there's a better way to deal with that. This conference report restores the claim subject to a one-year statute of limitations, and I recommend it to the body. Be glad to answer any questions.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Guilford, Representative Scrowrice?
To debate the conference report, Mr. Speaker.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the conference report.
Members of the body, this effort, which restores, as I read it very quickly in the multiple seconds I've had to review, does restore the state cause of action, which, as you've heard reported, was hurriedly passed in that special session. This is just one of the incredible mistakes made in the passage of House Bill 2, just one single mistake of the many mistakes made in that piece of legislation. So while I agree that state cause of action does need to be restored to this floor, it needs to, just this one provision even, needs to supersede this and include sexual orientation and gender identity.
Mr. Speaker, point of order. We're addressing the conference report, not bills
that
pass this
just
paper.
Just a moment. For what purpose does the gentleman from Wayne, Representative Bellrise, to a point of order?
Point of order. We're discussing the conference report, not bills that have previously gone through the chamber.
We are. We'd ask the gentleman from Guilford to try to contain his remarks as closely as possible to debating the conference report at hand. The gentleman has the floor to continue debate.
I will happily do that. I assume that most of you read the news article earlier that referenced the speaker and this potential effort as a literal fix to House Bill 2. So I will just say in closing that while this is important, it doesn't go nearly far enough. I think that any notion that this is going to save the business climate in the state of North Carolina is bunk. It certainly will not do that. It doubles down on discrimination against the LGBT community. So while I will support this, I am woefully embarrassed that this is the ultimate result of 2.5 months of conversation about the most disastrous piece of legislation in a long time in this body. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Orange, Representative Meyer, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to ask the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Bishop, a question.
Does the gentleman from Mecklenburg yield to the gentleman from Orange?
I yield.
He yields.
Thank you, Representative Bishop. So this bill that you have just addressed before us addresses General Statutes 143 and 1-54, and I believe that in your debate you referenced that section of House Bill 2 that was that also amended, I guess it was General Statute 1-54, although you can tell me if I'm incorrect, about state cause of action suits. You said that that section of House Bill 2 was wrongly interpreted as limiting the right to sue based on employment discrimination, and that this should be clarifying that. In order to understand whether I should vote for this bill or not, I wonder if you can explain to me what you think that section of House Bill 2 actually did, if it did not, in fact, limit state cause of action lawsuits for employment discrimination. What did it do?
Representative Meyer, thank you for the question. Actually, what I said is it's been widely misreported that the change we made in the House Bill 2 prevented employment discrimination victims from suing in state court. There have been innumerable press accounts to that effect. In fact, even the governor, who's not a lawyer, says that often. That's not true. As I said on the floor the day that we passed that law, the state law claim for relief that existed and was being eliminated at that time left in place federal claims for relief that can be filed in state court. There is concurrent subject matter jurisdiction in federal and state courts under the federal anti-discrimination laws. So that's one of the unfortunate distortions about HB2. But it has always been true, never has changed, that you could file employment discrimination claims in state court. Now, what did occur is that there was a state law claim for relief, the wrongful discharge and violation of public policy claim, a judge-made claim that originated in matters, subject matters other than employment discrimination, eventually had moved into the employment discrimination area. We eliminated that claim in the course of drafting so that we could accommodate the addition of new public accommodations non-discrimination protections. And having done that, it was misreported. It was received poorly for symbolic reasons, I think. And we said from the very day we were here that we would look at that provision. There's been widespread support, including by the governor, for the restoration of the claim. So we've restored that state claim. Now, someone now can bring a state claim and a federal claim in state court in North Carolina.
Mr. Speaker, may I speak on the bill?
The gentleman from Orange has the floor to debate the conference report.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Bishop's explanation, which I believe to be entirely factual, exhibits what a mess we ended up in after passing House Bill 2, that this bill restores the right and makes it easier for North Carolinians to appeal to our state courts for the right to sue for employment discrimination is a good thing, and I'm happy to support this bill.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Durham, Representative Michaud, rise?
To ask Representative Bishop a question.
Does the gentleman from Mecklenburg yield to the gentleman from Durham?
I yield.
He yields.
Representative Bishop, you indicated that there's a one-year statute of limitation for one section of this. I was trying to get back to that section before I got to quit. What section and what does that one-year statute of limitations affect?
We've added back the state law claim for relief. We have subjected it to a one-year statute of limitations. Generally, the wrongful discharge and violation of public policy claim, again, judge-made, in area subject matter areas other than employment discrimination, has been, because it's a judge-made claim and otherwise has never been legislated about, has been construed to be controlled by a three-year statute of limitations. One problem that creates is all of the employment discrimination claims, for example, under the North Carolina Disabilities Non-Discrimination Law, under the Americans with Disabilities Act, under the federal Title VII, are all subject to 180-day statute of limitations before a claim must be filed or an administrative charge must be filed. Having a three-year statute of limitations, which developed not by any intent, but by this circular path or circuitous path by which this state law claim has come to apply in this subject matter area, undermines the policy of those short statutes of limitations. So as we've added the claim back, we've addressed that by providing for a one-year statute of limitations for the wrongful discharge claim to the extent based on employment discrimination.
May I ask him a further question?
Does the gentleman yield to an additional question?
I yield.
He yields.
Considering the fact that employment discrimination in any form, shape, or fashion is a detrimental form of discrimination, why would you shorten the presumed three-year statute to a one-year statute?
Well, the policy that has been behind Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act and all of the other federal and state anti-discrimination laws employing short statutes of limitations is because of the unique nature of these claims. If you're in a business organization and you have someone who's responsible perhaps for varying levels of management and they for employees, you can't have it is unfair to employers, frankly, to have a long statute of limitations where people come and go, particularly because these claims always depend on conflicts in memory about what experiences people had. So those policies behind the employment discrimination statutes have led to the adoption of a short statute of limitations. The employee needs to act, needs to file their claim with the EEOC and proceed, would be undermined by having a statute of limitations six times as long in a claim that wasn't designed to do employment discrimination in the first instance. That's the reason, not to undermine the policy behind all of those enactments.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Martin Rice?
To debate the motion.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the motion.
I'm grateful for the good debate on that. The questions asked by the gentleman from Durham have helped me understand a little bit more about this. I think we all know that with all the problems in House Bill 2, this addresses probably the only thing in House Bill 2 that everyone was in agreement needed to come out, from the governor to the advocates on all sides, far left, far right, et cetera. Everyone understood that this needed to be fixed. And so we don't need to come out of here patting ourselves on the back with press conferences saying we fixed something big on House Bill 2. No kidding. This was the lowest of the low-hanging fruit. It does nothing to fix the core discrimination inherent to that bill. I'm voting for this, and I was initially excited to vote for this because I thought, well, we're at least going to fix the cause of action portion of it. But thanks to the questioning from the gentleman from Durham, we aren't even fully fixing that. We're not going back to the status quo on this. Workers and everyone else who've been discriminated against in North Carolina will still, after we pass this bill, be worse off than they were before the passage of House Bill 2. I'm voting for it, but I ain't too happy about it.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Pitt, Representative Murphy, rise?
To speak about the bill, please.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the motion.
I think this is a great step forward. I'd like you to vote for it, and I think that's all I need to say.
What purpose does the gentleman from Guilford, Representative Scrow, rise?
To see if the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Bishop, will yield for a question.
Does the gentleman from Mecklenburg yield to the gentleman from Guilford?
I yield.
He yields.
Representative Bishop, if there's an acknowledgement that in that 12-hour process that resulted in the initial passage of House Bill 2, that there were mistakes made that are resulting in this hastily assembled piece of legislation that I'm seeing without consulting the LGBT community with a couple of minutes, that there could be other problems that we should be debating. So why are we not debating the other provisions of House Bill 2 alongside this?
Well, we're debating this fix, Representative Scrow, I haven't said that I think it was a mistake. I said it was widely misreported. And there have been some other aspects of the bill that have been widely misreported, but it certainly resolves the policy issue that was involved in it in another way, and I think it's an improvement. And you're new here. I'm fairly new here. I find that there are many times that good legislation is revisited and improved, and this is a case of that.
Follow up, Mr. Speaker.
Does the gentleman yield to an additional question?
I yield.
He yields.
Representative Bishop, I am new to this body. I'm certainly not new to this issue, as I know that you are not either, having been the architect of this. You've acknowledged, though, that it is worthwhile that we are having this conversation right now. Why is it not worthwhile that we are having a conversation about the entire bill? $500 million in economic harm later.
The gentleman's out of order. What purpose of the gentleman from Craven or is it specially rise?
Point of order.
I think the chair has addressed it. For what purpose does the gentleman from Vance, Representative Baskerville, rise?
Ask Representative Bishop a question.
Does the gentleman from Mecklenburg yield to the gentleman from Vance?
I yield.
He yields.
If the cause of action, the time period to file the cause of action has been condensed from 3 years to 1 year, do you think a natural result of that would be a rush for individuals to file these sort of claims since they have a limited amount of time, therefore leading to increased frivolous claims under this cause of action, which would create an additional burden on businesses?
I think not, Representative Baskerville, and here's why. Anybody who practices employment discrimination law knows, and I had this conversation when I was with the executive committee of the Charlotte Chamber discussing this, and a lawyer who does that admitted that this is correct. 95% or more of these claims are handled and will be filed as claims that combine federal claims under Title VII or some other federal enactment and state. So almost invariably, people file these claims within 180 days. It almost never occurs that you file a state claim alone. And in fact, if you file the state claim, the wrongful discharge in violation of public policy claim, it is not as robust as the federal protections that you enjoy under federal statute. It often can be a mistake. There's a reported case, two reported cases from the Court of Appeals, one of them in 2015, in which a client was deprived of a recovery for religious accommodation because they proceeded under the state law claim alone. So that's what I said on the day that we discussed this the first time, is the federal claim is more robust, the remedies are better, and the rights are broader under the federal law than under this anyway. But nonetheless, for the reasons previously indicated, we believe it would be best to restore the claim for relief, and that's what we've done. It would be unimaginable for it to result in a rush of claims.
Question before the House is the adoption of the conference report to House Bill 169. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 82 having voted in the affirmative and 18 in the negative, the conference report to House Bill 169 is adopted. The Senate will be so notified.